This is Fresh Air. We're continuing with our weekly series of interviews from the Fresh Air Archives with this conversation with Robert Townsend. Robert Townsend wrote, produced, directed, and starred in the semi-autobiographical film Hollywood Shuffle. He also wrote, directed, and starred in The Five Heartbeats and his current film, Meteor Man. He directed the Eddie Murphy performance film Raw, has acted in supporting roles in A Soldier's Story, Streets of Fire, and American Flyers, and also works as a stand-up comedian. Terry Gross spoke to Townsend in 1987 after the success of Hollywood Shuffle, in which a young black actor discovers that the only parts available to him are absurd black stereotypes. Townsend's memories of auditioning for the stock black roles as pimps and junkies were still very fresh.
I didn't know how to speak up at that point because every actor in town was in there auditioning, and I said, wait, this is a terrible script. Maybe it's me. And then I started thinking about it, and I would go in and read a script, and I go, this is terrible. And then the next guy, this is the greatest pimp I've ever read, you know. And I think it had to do with, you know, I began back then to begin to look and see something was wrong.
What kind of roles were you auditioning for that you're talking about?
Stoolies on TV shows, you know, the guys that always have the information that the cops always talk to, Huggy Bear, Turkey Neck, you know, they always have those weird names. So those are the kind of parts I would audition for.
Are you convincing in that kind of role?
I'm a good actor. I could pull it off. Yeah, I mean, I consider myself a good actor. You know, I wouldn't mind doing a street character if I could play a lawyer next week and a doctor the week after that, or a detective like Sam Ace or something like that.
But the problem is there aren't many roles like that to play.
Right. They always write the stereotypical, you know, just jive street.
The character in your movie is directed to be blacker while he's playing a part or auditioning for a part. Were you ever directed to be more black?
Oh, yeah, because, see, the way I talk, when you're considered black, you're supposed to talk like, well, yeah, baby, you know, I'm doing this interview and things with you. So that's the way I should talk. That's considered black. If I was saying like, oh, this is national radio, baby, that's black. But the way I'm talking now, then they say, well, you don't sound black. I mean, you could, you know, if I was just tuning in, I would say, is this a black person? I don't give you the key words. And so a lot of times they ask you to be black or because black is, you know, all the, you know, sitcoms of the 70s. And they say what? So that's considered black.
Now, you've also been in some TV commercials. For years, there were virtually no black actors in TV commercials, but now, especially in burger commercials and in soft drink commercials, there's a lot of black actors in it. Are there new stereotypes of blacks coming out through these commercials?
No, I think commercials, if anything, they show black people in a better light. I mean, in TV commercials, at least I had dignity in 60 seconds. I mean, I was a bank teller, I was a construction worker, I was a plumber, just a regular guy hanging out at an office building, you know, waiting on a date. I mean, they have different, you know, commercials at least show life. You'll see a black family on a TV commercial. On TV shows, you never see that. You know, you'll see, like, for McDonald's, you'll see, it's time to go, our family's on our way to McDonald's. Hey, Dad, you know, and they'll show, like, a loving family or Tide commercial. They, you know, show a family with a mother and father. Your average show on TV, it's always, I had to raise these kids on my own, and I never seen they daddy.
What are some of the movies you liked when you were growing up?
Wizard of Oz. My favorite film of all time is Here Comes Mr. Jordan with Robert Montgomery. That was one of my favorite films.
I love that film. That's the film about the boxer who's been reincarnated, basically, sent back
right.
down to Earth.
Yeah, Claude Rains, Robert Montgomery, and Warren Beatty did the updated version with Buck Henry and James Mason. It's like, Joe, listen, Joe, you're not Pendleton, Joe. You can't stay in this body, Joe. You know, that was one of my favorite films.
As a teenager, did you like any of the exploitation films like Shaft and Superfly?
I love those movies because that was the first time we saw the black man get the girl. You know, I remember seeing the scene in Superfly when he made love in the bathtub, and it was like, I can't believe this. Because other than that, black people had played butlers, and it's like, you want your luggage, Mr. Jenkins? And that was the only role we played. And so when you saw Shaft, and he had a gun, and he slapped people around, and he fought for right, you know, it was like, great. We had never seen it. because normally the black actor was the buddy to the star. He never, you know, like, he never was the man. You know, he never was in charge and said, I'm fighting for right, and that's what I'm going to do here. You guys are bad, you know. And Shaft was that way, and Superfly was that way. I just think that they made more pimp movies than they made movies about, you know, black people from the regular walks of life. I think that's what messed everything up. There were too many negative role models. I mean, if they would have had a pimp movie and then a movie about a doctor, then a movie about a lawyer, and a movie about a guy who was in love, everything would have been fine. But it was just, you know, 90 pimp movies versus one sounder. You know, that was what the deal was.
Film writer, director, and actor Robert Townsend spoke to Terry Gross in 1987. His current film, Meteor Man, came out this summer and continues to play in theaters around the country. Next, Richard Lewis after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Comedian Richard Lewis toiled for many years doing stand-up comedy in clubs. He has since moved on to performing in large arenas and appeared many times on The David Letterman Show. Several years ago, he also began starring in TV sitcoms. He shared the bill with Jamie Lee Curtis in Anything But Love. He currently stars with Don Rickles in their new show, Daddy Dearest. Terry Gross spoke with Richard Lewis in 1988 when he had a comedy special on HBO called I'm Exhausted.
Thank you. You're a great audience. I wish I could feel better about feeling good, quite frankly. I'm a hypochondriac. My grandparents, they lived in a place that made me so out of it in Florida. I think the condo was called Crestfawn. That was the name of it, you know. So I feel, you know, and they bought me little gifts. I mean, well, they were very negative. We had like a little depression fair in the backyard for my birthday, and we used to throw wooden hoops around. Prescription drugs was a big thing. And they had No Tomorrowland, which is sort of a big thing. And Pin the Blame on the Donkey was a major game in our house.
How did the I'm Exhausted show come about? Do you go around saying to friends all the time, oh, God, I'm exhausted?
I said that actually, I think, to my mother moments after I was born. I just have always been exhausted for the fear that I wouldn't do enough work. That's a whole other area, isn't it? No, I don't always go around saying I'm exhausted. I'm a good friend. If I went to a funeral, I wouldn't be insensitive and say, I'm exhausted. I had been exhausted prior to doing this special for HBO. But the problem was the special had to be done in about 2 weeks. And that was like, this should have been an episode of Nova, you know. how a Jewish man with bad posture who searches for perfection is told by executives that, fine, but we have to have it delivered in 2 weeks. And, you know, we pulled it off, I think. I don't know. But I was exhausted doing it, and I think it shows. But in a positive, affectionate way.
When do you allow yourself to take some time off? Here's what I'm thinking of. I know I'm the kind of person who, in order to take a day off, I have to have something measurable, like a temperature. You know, like, right. If I have a fever, fine, you stay home. Are you like that? I mean, do you need to have something really tangible, a real tangible problem in order to actually get some rest?
I need, basically, I get rest after a breakup from a relationship. I usually then feel I reward myself. I usually go away for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Without sounding, tongue-in-cheek here too much. I mean, I really put a lot into relationships, and when they don't pan out, I then take a rest. I also, when I get the flu, God forbid, but when I do, it's like everything stops. I pull the phones out of my house. I don't care. I have absolutely no responsibility to anyone. I don't go to surprise parties. I'm in the bed. I'm in the bed for as long as it takes. I just feel as nauseated as I am, it's the only time I really relax.
Did you enjoy being sick when you were a kid?
Well, I did because I usually wasn't, but people did. It was like a hypochondriacal kabuki theater I put on for the family, and I had different makeups for different ailments, of course. The flu, I felt, was the dead giveaway. I mean, it was this kabuki, very white makeup, and it was almost a mask-like effect, and it was frightening. I was half a bison, half a Jewish man, and it was, I come down to breakfast knowing that my family would shriek and then have me stay home, and they normally did.
Are you a hypochondriac now?
Yes, sadly.
What are the diseases you most often think you're getting?
Well, I would say mostly, and not to make light of diseases because they're so horrific, and certainly the sexual stuff now is so frightening. I basically get worried when I see any kind of rash. even if the slightest rash, I feel it will eventually spread into just cover me like Elephant Man. And I run to every salve store. There's a lot of salve boutiques in Los Angeles, thank God. And I have a rash man in Beverly Hills who I like. But basically, it's rashes that scare me more than anything. And also, any kind of back pain, I always fear, and I always did as a kid, sadly, whenever I got a sore throat, for example, I really felt it would never go away. This was when I should have known then that that psychotherapy was right around the corner.
Do you ever have audiences who are so well-adjusted that they don't get your jokes about neuroses?
I don't like to consider any audience well-adjusted, seriously. I don't like to judge people. And I certainly wouldn't judge people in that light. I don't find too many people are well-adjusted, and if there were, I wouldn't go over very well. If I ever bomb, thank God I don't bomb as much as you do when you start out, I would just blame myself.
Can I ask you what your bar mitzvah was like? And here's why I ask it. For a lot, I mean, a bar mitzvah is, in Jewish terms, it's a religious ceremony to mark the beginning of manhood. It's just, but for a lot of people, it's like their first opening act, you know, like the first initiation into show business, because, like, you're the star of the show, there's a band, there's an MC, you know, everybody in your family gets to dance and everything, and you're the star. Was it like a, what kind of bar mitzvah did you have?
Spielberg could not have done justice to what I had. And first of all, my father, who has passed on, was the greatest caterer in the area, New Jersey and in parts of New York. He was really a genius. So, of course, he catered my bar mitzvah. It got off on a low self-esteem note that my father was booked up on the weekend for my bar mitzvah. I had to settle for a Tuesday afternoon.
You're kidding.
Early evening bar mitzvah party. Unheralded in the Torah. I mean, I heard Moses grumbling, well, how can he do that to his son Ra? But what happened was, I understood, you know, he had a job to do, and Tuesday night was sort of hip, now that I think of it. But before the party, I had to, the Saturday before, I had to read what they call the Haftorah, or Haftorah, I'm very bad with the accents here. But what happened was that I started screwing up a little bit, and I saw some of the congregation getting a little uneasy, and then I started doing stand-up. I went, oh, I'm kidding, Jonah and the Whale, come on. And I started playing the temple like a lounge.
I mean, I don't mind being with the family on Hanukkah, because being on the road, like, I was in the Deep South about 2 years ago on Hanukkah. They thought Hanukkah was a duck call. That's all I know. It was like, Hanukkah, pull, shoot. That's all, you know. I tiptoed around the Deep South on Hanukkah. I just want a sandwich. I'll be fine. Just let me have a sandwich. But Hanukkah, Christmas, we didn't know what we were, quite frankly. It was sort of a... I really don't know what we were. We had like a... There was a Christmas tree, and yet it was a Hanukkah bush. It was sort of like a... Sort of like an Elephant Man kind of thing there. It was like... They had balls hanging down, and yet there was like a picture of gold in my ear sort of over here. It wasn't Hanukkah. It wasn't Christmas. It was Chronica. We had Chronica.
Comedian Richard Lewis spoke with Terry Gross in 1988. He is currently starring as the psychiatrist's son of Don Rickles on the new show, Daddy Dearest. It can be seen on Sunday nights on the Fox Network. This is Fresh Air.